Hello there, listeners and viewers. Ron Stefanski here, the host of Disrupt Ed. This is where we talk to seemingly ordinary people who aren't ordinary at all. They're making an extraordinary impact in this ginormously disrupted world out there. And what do I mean by that? We're talking about nothing less than the 5G wired workforce augmented, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, Web3 immersive, pandemic interrupted world of work and learning. And no place has been near to my heart, but more disrupted than the world of upskilling and education. And for you youngsters, you know, stepping off the shoulders of me and others in the space to take us to new heights, here's an opportunity to listen to the voice of success and experience over the long haul. So I first met our special guest today, Todd Hitchcock, the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Strategy Officer for UTI. And I first met Todd back in the early ages of the internet being used as an educational vehicle. And we started an organization together. He was operating an online initiative in Toronto. And we met and a group of us started talking about how do we launch these things and how do we get them to scale. And we decided to go after some grant money and finance, you know, this discussion. So we started the first nonprofit in online learning for K-12. It was called NACOL, the North American Council for Online Learning. And then it became INACOL International. And then now it's known as the Aurora Institute. And Todd and I were in those conversations, in those rooms, talking about vision, strategy, outputs. And doesn't it feel like a century ago, Todd? It's so great to have you here, by the way.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ron. It's funny, as I was thinking about this, and it's been a long time, obviously, since we talked. And when I saw your podcast, Disrupt Ed, and I started to look at what you're doing, I couldn't think of someone any better. From back from those early days when what we were doing, really, we were fighting a war to really prove that online learning could be valuable to students. And candidly, I don't think a lot of people believed us at the time. And now it's just weaved into the fabric of all of education, both K-12 and higher education. So I'm fond memories of that core group of us, you and I and a number of others, that we were very lucky to be at right time and right place.
We absolutely were. When you think about it, it was just fortuitous that we were able to meet and get together. You know, what I loved about it was the sense of camaraderie that quickly established. Julie Young, I'm still in touch with. Justin McMorrow, we're still both in touch with. They're both gurus in that space. And I learned a lot from all of you. You know, I learned a lot about where it was going. And, you know, at the same time, there was money there, you know, in abundance, and then there was no money. And there were things happening in the public sector and things happening in the private sector. And you know, you're very similar to me in that respect. I worked on both sides of it. So when we met, I was representing Michigan Virtual. You went on to work for the largest virtual school out there, Florida Virtual. But I think about the courses we offered then and what's possible now. And it's just, you know, it's mind numbing, really.
Remarkable.
John, tell me, in your most recent role at UTI, tell me about UTI. Tell me about what's driving your operation and what's got you so excited as it relates to all that we've learned and all that we've come through in the world of higher ed learning.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you. And you know, I've been at Universal Technical Institute. I've been working with the company 8 years, been with the company in the role of Chief Strategy Officer and then Chief Operating Officer for the past 6. And you know what's interesting, Ron, is that, you know, you described it very well, kind of came through a very kind of disruptive environment online. And then in higher education, really working with a lot of the very academic tier two, R1s, I should say, and R2 universities as they built online. I never really had the opportunity to kind of work in the area of skilled trades and allied health. So when this opportunity came along, I'm a first generation college student. And I looked up all the students, the population that Universal Technical Institute had, and the vast majority are first generation students. So as far as the company, we're a national provider of workforce solutions. We really work and strive to prepare students for in-demand jobs. We have thousands of employer partners that we help to fill their talent gap. We operate two very distinct educational divisions, UTI, which was the parent company, and our name of our corporate company is Universal Technical Institute. But UTI offers programs for skilled technicians and trades in areas like aviation technology, welding, auto diesel, wind, energy, and a number of others. And then a very kind of different division is our Concord Career College, where we offer healthcare programs in things like nursing, surg tech, diagnostic medical sonography, respiratory therapy, dental hygiene, and many others. So very kind of unique divisions and program offerings. But when you boil it down, the students, the demographics of the students, the age and the gender is a little different, but where they're coming from and their backgrounds are very, very similar. And that's interesting because the services that one needs to put in place to serve that group of students is very different than those that maybe, you know, maybe put in place for an academic institution. We have 32 campuses, approximately 24,000 students across the country. And I think what we're, you know, widely recognized for is our student outcomes and our employer partnerships.
Yeah, let's talk about the outcomes, because I think that's the war you were talking about. Is at first we struggled to make sure that online learning had a place at the table. And then the second thing we had to fight was the perception and sometimes the reality that our, you know, our take-up rates were high, our completion rates were low. A lot of that has significantly changed, but that's still something that operators need to be mindful of.
Completely agree. And I think that spans online and on-ground, it spans two-year colleges, four-year colleges, really is how college and university kind of focus on, or struggle with, but focus on identifying and retaining students. And I think a big part of that retention revolves around the services that, you know, a school put in place. And that's really important to us because, you know, I often say that our model is built on, we only succeed if students succeed. We say that often, if students succeed, we succeed. And what I mean by that is that if we bring a student into one of our programs, Ron, and they drop out after 6 weeks or 7 weeks, we fail. We're not financially successful as a company, but we fail in our objectives as well. So we have tied our success very, very closely. We have to our student success. And candidly, I think that is kind of one of the kind of our competitive advantages. And the other one is, which we haven't touched on yet, we'll talk more about it. It's really our relationship with employers and manufacturers. And that's something that's really unique about this environment, these schools and this business that I hadn't seen as much in even our traditional world of online learning, is how closely and tightly bound we are to our employers and our manufacturers and our providers. So that's a really key, important aspect for us. And candidly, I think our most important asset.
You know, Todd, I was just at a workforce conference here in Detroit at New Lab, our incubator for the mobility sector. And we were talking about workforce initiatives. And we were talking about this very thing. How do we get more people to complete? And how do we get more people access to education in those high paying jobs? And, you know, what you're talking about is really near and dear to me, skilled trades, because I was telling the group that I was moderating a panel, and I said, you know, the interesting thing for me is when I was growing up on the east side of Detroit, it wasn't about college. My family was saying, you need to go out there and learn a trade. You can go on to college later, but what you need to do is you need to learn a trade that you can fall back on. And that was a very powerful message to a lot of us during that time. And, you know, a lot of skilled trades has moved out of the K-12 curriculum. A lot of people have no longer funded it. The federal funding for it was waned for a while. And so we now have a real talent crisis in the skilled trades. And the woman behind me, whom you see, is my grandmother, Vicky. I mean, she is the archetype of the skilled trades doyen. You know, she was an immigrant who came to this country with a sixth grade education. She never went further in her education, but she learned a trade and during the war went to work for Chrysler and became, you know, a skilled tradesperson in an automotive plant. And I think about that and how important that was, because with that, my grandfather and her had two salaries coming in, and they were able to do what many Americans couldn't do at that time and at the end of World War II, and that was to buy their own home. And that painting that you see there is their home on the east side of Detroit. It's, you know, it's, and she was so proud of that home and what they'd accomplished. And all she wanted subsequently was to see us do better. And I think that's, you know, so I want to talk about your North Star strategy, because to me, a company without a North Star is a, you know, or an entity, public or private, is not really doing its full service in my mind if they're not pointed to a larger mission. So I'd like to explore that with you, Todd, and how you guys frame it and how you go about executing it across the vast span of, you know, 32 campuses and 24,000 students. That's not an easy operation.
Yeah, no, thanks for asking that question. It is, you know, the North Star really is, our North Star strategy really is the key driver for the company's focus and ongoing success. As I say, we launched version one of it, which we're kind of coming up on. We're moving into version two, which I'll talk about in a moment. But we launched that 6 years ago with the goal of realizing the company's full potential and really partnering to solve the country's shortage of what we call skilled collared workers. So, you know, we've talked a lot about
that. I like that term, skilled collar.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that it has evolved from kind of the blue collar world to a skilled collar worker, and the type of work that these individuals do, the skills that they need to have, the outcomes that they achieve once they're on the job. So we really see this as kind of a skilled collared workforce. And the North Star strategy is the foundation for every single strategic decision, strategic investment initiative that we take on. But I think what's important about it is there are three key drivers, and you kind of think of it as a Venn diagram. They're not mutually exclusive. They're overlapping. And the first driver is growth. That was the first thing that we realized. We had to get the company growing. We had to get the programs growing. And so that kind of circle in the Venn diagram is really all about defining, realigning, and refining our existing offerings, our physical footprints, to make sure that we're offering the right programs to the students that we have in those communities. And that's really driven not necessarily by what people want, but maybe someone wants as a, maybe it goes back to the, you know, the Steve Jobs saying, hey, I know what the products are that people need. I don't think we are that brazen, but we actually start with the employers, and we start with the outcomes the employers want and the programs they need. That allows us to craft the programs that we offered. So that was really the first circle, was growth. How do we think about growing the organization? The second was diversification. And that, of course, helps with growth, but it's really looking at, where do we need to add new location? Where are the communities that actually need schools, where there are a lot of jobs for great employers? And so where are those, where should we put schools? And then what programs should we be offering? So diversifying our product offering. And interestingly, you mentioned Eastern Detroit. Is the first thing that we realized, Ron, was that we can grow organically. We can build all these things, but we realized we could go much faster if we found the right partner, or in this case, the right company to acquire. So we acquired MIAT College of Technology, which is just about 30 miles east of Detroit at a campus down in Houston. That allows us to add aviation. It allows us to add wind energy. It allowed us to add a number of other industrial maintenance programs. So we're able to lift those programs and replicate them across our other programs, increasing the offerings for students. So that was our kind of diversification circle. And the last one may not be the most exciting to most people, but it's one of the most exciting ones to me. It's optimization. So growth, diversification, and optimization. And optimization is really about how we're continually optimizing the system, how we're looking at all aspects of the operations. And I mean that seriously. We are continually looking at every single aspect of the operation and how can we make it better. And you know what I think it is? I think it's curiosity. Is once you inject curiosity into an organization and think about, how do we do this differently? How can we eliminate dogma and think about doing things better? You know, optimization as a headline doesn't sound very exciting, but once you realize it's all about curiosity and continuous improvement, It really generates energy inside the organization and in both our divisions as well. So kind of that's phase one. And really, and I'll pause, but at its core, the North Star strategy really just aligns us more deeply with the industry and just kind of relentlessly focusing on optimizing how we deliver education and achieve the outcomes.
You know, Todd, you mentioned something very important and significant, and that's the employer relationships. And, you know, yesterday was an example of about a dozen different workforce, convenings I've gone to where the classic conundrum comes up. How do we engage employers more? And I noticed that, and this is not a dig at higher ed, but I've noticed a lot of traditional organizations talk about it. They talk about it a lot. But they struggle with how to actually implement that. So I'd like you to talk a little bit more because that is part of your North Star strategy. It's also part of the DNA of the Universal Technical Institute. It's part of your, you know, your very reason for being, it seems to me.
No, yeah, no, thank you for asking that. It is. And by the way, I think that is a major differentiator. And we've got over 4,000 employer partnerships. And I kind of define partnership because it's a broad use, but let me start at the top first. On the transportation side, we work very deeply with companies like Ford, BMW, Mercedes, Peterbilt, and so on. And we offer these things called a manufacturer-specific advanced training programs. So the best way to describe it is our core program for, say, auto diesel is a base program like a bachelor's degree. An MSAT, manufacturer-specific advanced training program, is like a master's degree. Once you graduate from the core program, you can move into any one of these specialties. We offer 38 of them across our footprint. And what it allows students to do, and a lot of students don't realize, if you want to go and work at a dealership and you want to do warranty work on a BMW, Mercedes, Ford, Porsche, you have to be specially trained. You can't just come out of a core program and do this. And the reason is the manufacturers reimburse the dealerships for this training, and they want the best technicians possible. So we offer those programs. We're very proud of those. And why that's important, Ron, is that we are measured by the OEMs, the manufacturers, by the number of students we place in brand. They help us with the curriculum. We co-develop the curriculum. They provide the labs for us. So if you were to come and visit our campus, you would walk in and you'd see the BMW lab. Then you'd walk down the hall and you'd see the Ford lab and so on. So they work with us to provide the curriculum. Students wear appropriate uniforms or with the brands for their, when they're in the MSAT programs. And then when they graduate, the employers are confident that they have the requisite skills they need to kind of do that higher level work. In Allied Health, and I think this is super important too, is when we acquired, I neglected to tell you about our acquisition of Concord when I was talking about diversification. We knew that there's tremendous demand in skilled trades, but we also realized the impact of the silver tsunami that's impacting healthcare. And so we decided that it would be valuable for us to diversify into healthcare. We acquired Concord Career Colleges, which, as I shared, offer allied health and dental. But shortly after the acquisition, we were approached by Heartland Dental. And Heartland Dental is the largest dental service organization in the United States. They have around 1,800 dental offices that they offer. They're white labeled. You would never know you're going into a Heartland Dental.
That's amazing.
But they're white labeled. Yeah. And they came to us, Ron, and they said, hey, we'd like to do what you're doing with BMW. And we met with them. We said, what do you mean? And he said, we have got a tremendous shortage for dental hygienists. And for us, every time there's an operatory open without a dental hygienist in it, you know, we're losing revenue. So we would like to partner with you. So we explained the model, but then to your point about getting local to the community and meeting the employer's needs, we said, you need something entirely different. We need to partner very deeply together. So we did our groundbreaking a couple months ago with Heartland Dental. We're launching our first co-branded campus down in Fort Myers, Florida. It will open the doors in the fall, where they are providing all of the technology, the operatories, helping the build out. We're providing the curriculum instruction, but they're also giving us access to information that we kind of wouldn't have. They have the highest end artificial intelligence scanners for diagnostics. We get access to use those. Our students get access to that. So to your point, it's really kind of building those close relationships. And I should say it doesn't stop there. The partnerships where you mentioned it, and I think it's difficult, candidly, for higher education institutions to do this. We have key performance indicators in our contract with Hargrave that says, we commit to doing this and making these graduates available. They commit to doing this. We have quarterly business reviews that we hold each other accountable. It's all about focusing on the student, and it's all about producing higher quality, increased number of dental hygienists in a community that candidly we would have never gone to. We would have never built a school down in Fort Myers. It's small. There's not enough. There's tremendous need for dental care, tremendous shortage, but for demand. So we're getting into communities through some of these partnerships that we never would have if we hadn't gone deep in these partnerships.
Well, it also sounds like a couple of things that I take away from what you just said. One is that it's not about, degrees or credentials. It's about outcomes and employment. That's exactly. That's the end game. It's not about, oh, I can check the box. And I think for, the mid part of our movement toward more online learning, I think we had to come to terms with making sure that we were achieving the outcomes that were necessary. And, by working with employers, I think it's a higher stakes proposition because they're very unforgiving, about not performing. And so you're disincented tremendously if you don't deliver a good outcome. And sometimes I think that hasn't been the case in the higher ed world. And we have a lot of federally funded programs out there that aren't necessarily achieving that. There's still a sense of, train and pray. And I think the world is too disruptive for that. We need to take people from point A, and that's where you find them, and then launch them to where they're headed. And that's a meaningful, life-sustaining, family-supporting job, right?
Yeah. You actually said something that I think it's really important about the employers. And I should share is that in my entire career before I came to UTI, I felt like our responsibility stopped when the student graduated. And we had given them, the best education as possible. That's not the way we think. We actually are not happy. Not even when they're placed in a job. We do that. We work with students. We have a career center. We're maniacally focused on ensuring students get a job. And the vast majority of students of our students get a job in the fields in which they're in within a year. But we're not satisfied until we get feedback from the employer saying, Ron is a great employee. He is doing X, Y, and Z. So our outcomes are really based on the employer's feedback, which is based on the student's success. So we've moved that one step forward. And again, I think that's a differentiator for us. And candidly, if we don't do that, Ron, they're not going to continue to hire our graduates. We're not going to have the reputation we have. So I really feel that that is a huge differentiator. And candidly, it may seem kind of boring, but somewhat of a disruptor, I think, in education.
Well, yeah. And I think we've come to terms with a lot of very concrete ideas that you guys have converted into best practice. Number one, online learning can't be a check-the-box proposition. Number two, it needs to be outcomes and hiring and employability focused. Number three, it has to be affordable, and that's one of the access points that is most criticized right now about higher education is the high cost of it. So if you're delivering it and optimizing it, as you suggested, as part of your North Star, I think that's what we're going to see more of from institutions of higher learning. And as the federal government takes shots at higher ed institutions, I think there's going to be more of a drive, not less, but more of a drive toward efficiency. How do we bring the cost down? And the only way to do that is to optimize the learning experience for the learner, but also for the operator, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
It's not a surprise to me, Todd, but I have so many more questions for you. So as we wrap this episode, the first thing I want to do is invite you to come back because I think there's so much to be said about the experience you and I both share in the higher ed online learning space. I mean, there's so many exciting things happening. But as we wrap up, to our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Todd Hitchcock, the Chief Operating Officer for the Universal Technical Institute, UTI. And it's been a joy and pleasure to have you here, Todd. any last minute takeaways that you want to share with our audience before we consider this a wrap?
No, well, I'll share one thing. You know, I think it's important because, you know, one of the things I think you and I have talked about in the past, Ron, is meeting the students where they are. And our whole philosophy is probably different than many institutions, is that when we look at building new campuses or new programs, we look at the core-based statistical area just like everyone else does, the large areas. But then we look at the demographics of our students, and we look at the demographics of the community. We use ArcGIS and Esri to do that. And we put our schools in the communities where our students live. And that's a bit of an anomaly in the sense of, you know, not having a bright, shiny building downtown. It's putting the schools right in the communities where the demographics of our students are. And I think that is super important because you and I know that, you know, the access to education has social benefits, economic benefits. So I think that's something that's really important too. So we Jerome and I, our CEO, often say profits don't define us, they sustain us. And that's the way we lead the company. And that's the way we choose to serve the communities in which we're in.
Well, I commend you, Todd, for all the work you're doing at UTI. It's pretty spectacular, gobsmacking, in fact. And I'm really glad that you'll be able to join us in a few months and we'll resume this conversation. Until then, we're going to ask our listening and viewing audience to get disrupted with us. What do I mean by that? I mean, give us your feedback. Give us your honest take. Give us your opportunity to share this with your friends and stay disrupted with us. Until the next time, this is Ron Stefanski. Thank you for joining us. And Todd, thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you, Ron.